Hello, everybody. Good morning to most of you. A special Goat District today. We've been crushing it lately with the guests. Today is no different. Goat District doubleheader today. I hope everybody enjoyed the Super Bowl. We got Alfredo Brown in the district. We got Dan Williamson, as always. We're going to get after it today, fellas. How you guys doing today?
Great. Ready to rock. It's a new season now.
Yeah, feeling better than a lot of the Philadelphia Eagles fans this morning. So that's the good part about having a team that's not very good. They can't hurt you anymore. That's what it is. So I'm feeling good.
100%. Let's get after it, fellas.
Goat District, you know the Pope listens. Dynasty, our religion, for the blokes missing on all of these trades, on all of these plays, on all of these grades. By the end of the day, y'all getting played. So what you gonna do next? Try to fill up that flex, send the homie a text. That trash offer's the best. You try to make it complex, then they text you back. Now all of a sudden, they don't make any sense. Broaden your horizons, boy. Dynasty's not for the Simons, boy. These trades not for consignment, boy. Respect your opponent, y'all some piranhas, boy. This my advice from me to you. Open up your cute little podcast queue. Search up GOAT District, my dude. Pop it in your ear, man. Y'all know what to do. It's the and I always be traded, traded, traded. And I always be traded, traded, traded. And I always be trading. Y'all try to betray them, but first you gotta bait them, bait them, bait them, fish.
So yeah, last night was a lot of fun. We're going to touch on the Super Bowl shortly, but our guest is Alfredo Brown of Football Guys. He's putting out tremendous content. I know that a lot of you have been able to tune in and see John Lobb, Matt Hicks, Cody Carpentier. We've been having on some really excellent guests previewing this 2023 rookie class, and Alfredo is no different. Alfredo, why don't you let everybody know where they can find your work right now and the great podcast content you've been putting out?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at the Pretend GM, and then all my work is over at Football Guys. We're heading into a really I think this is the most hopeful part of the season for dynasty managers, right? Like there's a lot of excitement about the rookies, and everyone, you know, gets to become a scout this time of year, and that's what makes it so much fun. So you'll see all that stuff on Football Guys throughout the offseason on a YouTube page, and then my show, the Pretend GM Fantasy Football Show, we're gonna have tons of guests as well and highlighting all these different rookies, doing various mock drafts, talking about the offseason stuff. So it should be a really fun offseason over at Football Guys.
Yeah, it's an awesome offseason. You know, we've got the franchise tag date coming up like very, very shortly. We're going to have some clarity on that this week. We did have some clarity on the by far and fantasy football Twitter, the follow with the best Super Bowl spread was our own Dan Williamson, the overhyped sleeper. Dan, how did the Super Bowl party go last night for you?
Oh man, it was a great party. I tell you, if you want to get the best spread at your party, the easiest way to do it is make it a competition. We have competitions for both appetizers and desserts. There's little prizes for best appetizer, best dessert, and then also a prize for the most creative appetizer and dessert. So people really bring their A game. You know, it doesn't even matter if you have prizes. People are just all about winning. You know, it's a competition, so. They all want to win. So yeah, we've been doing Super Bowl party for over 30 years now, and it's just been amazing. I mean, you know how the food has progressed. So I'll have to post some pictures on Twitter.
You got to flex awesome on stuff. That one. Yeah, and that's a pretty big time flex. And Alfredo, how did you spend the Super Bowl last night?
Man, you know, I'd love to say that I had like some big spread and a cool party, but I didn't. It was me and my wife at home. It's one of the quietest Super Bowls I have done in a long time. My wife had just gotten back into town from a trip for work, and then I'm leaving on Wednesday to go to the FSGA conference in Las Vegas. So we just decided, you know, like for this little 3-day span that we actually have together, just no one else. Let's just enjoy it. And so I had a little quiet night at home.
Yeah, nice. Me as well. But it was my son's birthday. He turned 6. So we had like a low-key family night. A lot of fun. My kids made it to halftime, which I was proud. And then they crashed. And what a second half it was. Unbelievable game. You know, we can talk about the ending of the game. I think there's some like kind of sour grapes tweets today, but to me, that was one of the most exciting Super Bowls of all time. And it was certainly one of the most exciting second halves. What were your thoughts on the game, Alfredo?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of summed it up really well. This was one of the more exciting Super Bowls. And my wife, who doesn't really know anything about football, she's asking, how was the game? And I was like, honestly, it was awesome. Like, we haven't had a really good Super Bowl like this in a while. And it feels like every year there's always all the buildup and then it just kind of lets you down. This was actually one of the most fun Super Bowls. And listen, if there are people in the back room with their typewriter doing the NFL script, like they did it right this year, where they got us the most offense possible. They got us an exciting group of young playmakers, lots of speed. It was just, it was great to watch. And, you know, say what you will about the final call, but, you know, I don't know if the game came down to just that one call, but overall, really fun game.
It definitely, you got to give them, if it's a script, they won the Oscar last night, because that was pretty good right there. Dan, your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, to me, it was just really fun to watch two offensive masterminds using all the tools at their disposal to, you know, in just the best way possible. You know, that it was just so fun to watch those offenses work and how they, you know, how they just kind of, you know, found ways to keep producing against really a couple pretty good defenses. I mean, the Eagles defense is one of the best in the NFL. The Chiefs defense is no joke, but neither one was really able to slow the other one down. So, you know, it was a lot of fun. I think, you know, for those who are complaining about the officiating and all that, I mean, I don't know. You know, there's always going to be bad calls in games, but in this case, you know, the cornerback admitted I was holding. Juju said I was holding. The ref said he was holding. You know, so it is what it is. You know, we'd prefer no flags to come out in the last few minutes of the game, but sometimes it's got to happen.
To me, it was just unbelievable. I mean, you guys touched on it was like the quality of the quarterback play. Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes are going to be so expensive in redraft this year. That was one of the negatives about it is we always have kind of the recency bias of the playoffs and the Super Bowl. Those guys are going to be extremely expensive. Good luck trying to acquire either of them in Dynasty Superflex startup drafts. I mean, Jalen Hurts in a Dynasty Superflex startup draft, guys, where are you taking him? Well, I'll say Mahomes is, to me, still one. How are you ranking the top three right now in a super flex dynasty startup there?
I mean, right now, to me, I think there's a legitimate case to be made that Hurts could be number two over Josh Allen. I mean, you know, you can put them in either order, and I'm not going to quibble with it. But I think that's a clear top three, and then, you know, Burrow's not far behind them. So,
what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree wholeheartedly. I think it's when you get into like kind of the 2, 3, 4 area, it's even one, to be honest, with Mahomes. Like, it's sort of a just pick your flavor. You know, it's like, what do you want? How are you going to build your team? I do agree. Mahomes probably number one. And then I think it's a real toss up between Allen and Hurts there for the two spot.
Yeah, I think Hurts has flipped it, because to me, it's, We see the quality of the weapons around Hurts and the age, where Stephon Diggs is a little older in the tooth. You know, he'll be crossing, you know, that he's already past the, you know, the age apex. He's still producing, but, you know, those three receivers are just such quality players. You saw Devonta Smith, AJ Brown, Jalen Hurts kind of has it going. Tremendous offensive line play, and the Sirianni Hurts combination is just tremendous. So that's a whole nother show. And we could talk about the Super Bowl for an hour here, guys, but we got to dive into this rookie class. Again, Alfredo, I've had the privilege of listening to your takes on some of these guys, especially last year's class, which I really enjoyed. And I've enjoyed some of your takes on Twitter, so I'm really happy to dive into them today. How excited are you about this class in general? We've had such, you know, we've been so fortunate the last few years to have, you know, guys producing in redraft and dynasty right away for us. This has been a class that's been hyped for a few years. How are you feeling about the class in general?
Yeah, you know, I feel like we say the same thing every year about all these draft classes, where we get super excited about them early, and then as the draft gets a little bit closer, we hit this time of year, we get a little more disappointed. And we start to say, oh, well, there's not as much talent at the top, but it's really deep. And it sort of just becomes like the same routine every single year. But to be quite honest with this class, and I know a lot of people are trying to like save it and talk it up, is I get pretty uncomfortable with a lot of these picks outside of the top four. Like after you get past some of those top tier guys, like I just, especially in the non superflex leagues, I get really uncomfortable with these picks. There's not a guy where I'm sitting there at pick 5 or 6 or 7, and I am just really excited about getting that player. And I think this is the guy that's going to turn my team around. I think last year there was maybe about 7 or 8 guys that you could get and feel good in that first round of rookie drafts. And, you know, we've had these star wide receivers for the past few years coming out in each class and rookie wide receivers that produce. You had the big running back class back in 2020. This class kind of reminds me a little bit of like the 2016 rookie class where you had Zeke Elliott at the top and that's kind of your Bijan. And then you had a bunch of dart throws everywhere else. You ended up with like guys that ended up being good later on in the rookie draft, like Derrick Henry and Michael Thomas and Stephon Diggs, David Johnson, Tyler Lockett, like all those names, none of them, or maybe I think like one, maybe two of those guys were considered first round rookie picks that year. So I think this could end up being one of those similar seasons where we're going to see guys just kind of come out of nowhere, but there's not going to be a whole lot of obvious guys early in these rookie drafts.
And if you had to rank positionally this class, how would you go about ranking the strength of this class?
Oh man. You know, I would say it's kind of always easy to start with tight end as your worst, simply because tight ends just it's already such a crapshoot for the ones that are in the league that it's even that much harder for the rookies. Even though this is a good class, it's still just relative to fantasy. So I'd probably put tight end at 4. Quarterback is good, but man, I think quarterback and wide receiver is really close, but I put quarterback at 3, wide receiver at 2, and then running back simply because of the depth and obviously the top end talent with Bijan Robinson at 1 for this class.
Dan, we're 4 for 4 now with rookie shows where the running back position is clearly the strength of the class, and I would agree with that as well. Dan, I'm curious your thoughts because you're a very accomplished dynasty player. The enthusiasm for this class, it seems like it's like, you know, Alfredo touched upon it, how it seems like it happens every year. But the enthusiasm for this class, where last year we saw people, you know, coming on the show and saying, you know, trade the 2022, you know, 106 and non-superflex blindly for 2023 first. Like, there was so much enthusiasm, it just keeps kind of waning. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think it's going to pick up once we have the combine and once we have landing spots?
Oh, enthusiasm always picks up after the combine. And, you know, then once we get into the draft process, in the actual NFL draft, a lot of times the enthusiasm drops right back off because all of a sudden, you know, everybody wants to imagine, you know, their favorite prospects going to their favorite landing spots. And just, it doesn't happen, you know. It's going to be something stupid like Bijan goes to the Cowboys and just totally craters his value and Tony Pollard's or something like that. So, you know, those are the things you have to kind of steel yourself for and be ready to see happen. But yeah, as far as the overall class, I think, you know, like Alfredo said, you know, every year, you know, they're always talking up next year, next year, next year. But they were talking about the 2023 class for a good solid 2 years. Some people even talking about them when they were freshmen. You know, to me, it was a little bit disappointing to see, you know, what this class is actually looking like. I thought it would look a little better than it does. But, you know, it is what it is. And every class always, you know, as you guys say, they have surprises. So we won't know for a couple of years, really, how good this class ends up being.
Yeah, I think that this is actually, I would say that this is an opportunity to acquire picks because mm-hmm. the picks are going to be discounted until, you know, a few guys pop at the combine. You know, there's a guy like Quentin Johnson could do something remarkable and people start getting even more excited about him. You know, we see the depth of this running back class and a few of them are going to go nuts at the combine. And I think that that's going to kind of, you know, get a little bit more enthusiasm. And I think once we have clarity about the running back position, and we're going to dive into that with Alfredo. It's once we have a little bit more clarity on like running back 3, 4, 5, which I think that there's a lot of differing opinions on right now. I think that the rookie draft picks will be a little bit more valuable. Wanted to touch on one guy that Alfredo has been talking about on Twitter. And it's a player that we haven't dove into quite as much, Josh Downs, you really seem to like him a lot, Alfredo. We had Cody Carpentier has him like the 106 in his rookie draft, so but we didn't really dive into him. Maybe talk a little bit about his prospect profile, what excites you about him, and how you project him as an NFL player.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things, like, from my background, I started off as a college football scout where I was, you know, I was scouting high school kids coming in. And really, one of the first things that you're looking at is what's their talent level, right? Like, that's just the raw talent. And the next thing to kind of consider was, like, what is the football IQ there? Are they going to be able to adjust to the college game quickly enough? And you kind of have to ask those questions, too, when you talk about these college guys going to the NFL. But that's just so hard to see or to scout. It's such an intangible thing. So you try to see how much of that actually comes through in their play. And for Josh Downs, he comes off as a very intelligent route runner. I love his route running. He's just so spatially aware. That, to me, is one of the most important things in terms of a football player, whether it's quarterback, running back, tight end, wide receiver, any of these skill guys, is, are you spatially aware? Can you see the entire chessboard before making your move, while you're making your move? That's why there's all these players that, you know, they know how to beat a zone coverage. They know how to beat a man coverage. And then they can create yak after the catch. And because they have this awareness of what's going on around them in the field. And so for me, that was something that just popped off on tape so easily. And then you just kind of dive in a little bit deeper, take a look at the numbers. He's got back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, nearly 200 catches and 20 touchdowns over the last two seasons. He can beat man. He finds the open areas in zone. He's got the speed to win deep, create after the catch. He's got tremendous ball skills, which was surprising that he can come down with 50-50 balls so well, despite not being the biggest guy. He led the nation in contested catch rate and had the fourth highest passer rating when he was targeted. So this is a guy that we've seen. I know people talk about him being kind of stuck in that slot receiver role, but he's a guy that we've seen lead an offense from that role. And to me, he's kind of like a smaller, faster Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They're very similar, I think, in terms of their play style.
I love that. And I think that it's interesting that he was able to, and obviously they're both NFL quarterbacks, but he was able to thrive despite the quarterback change from Howell to May, although May is probably going to be a top three pick in next year's draft. But any NFL comparison? I mean, you mentioned a JSN, but is there any current NFL player that you kind of could see Josh Downs projecting like?
Oh, man, that's a really good one. Wow. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm going to have to come back to you guys on that. I'm going to have to take a look at my scouting report that I had here, because I've got my scouting report and I write down some player comps when I'm in there.
Yeah, awesome. And I also wanted to, you know, I heard your story about how you were a scout for scouting high school players on a previous podcast, but maybe just to go a little bit more into it because it's super interesting.
Yeah, so it was something that I was always actually just like a big fan of, and I was the kid that in high school, like, I wasn't paying attention to the teacher. I was just sitting there like drawing up mock drafts, and this was like YouTube and like the internet. Not to make myself sound that old, but like, it really wasn't all that big. Like, you couldn't just pull up YouTube on your phone. Your cell phones didn't work like that. So like, I was doing mock drafts on like line ruled paper by off memory. And that's how I was having to do them. And like, to me, I would come home and then I would pull up YouTube, which was like the biggest thing, and just like start looking at players and start to learn. And, and that was such a cool thing that I thought was like a hobby. And I got to college and I had played high school football and I had worked a little bit with my coach. And then I got to college. I applied for an internship to go work with the FIU football team. And I started off just doing really basic things. Let me organize all the films. Let me help you guys set up practices. And then, you know, I kept approaching, hey, I'd love to do a little bit more. And they're like, yeah, here, fill out all these scouting reports. And it was more of like a get out of my face sort of thing. Like, this will keep them busy. And they handed me like a list of like 1,000 names. They're like, here, fill out these scouting reports. And I was like, cool, how do I do that? And they're just like, go on YouTube, go on Huddle, find whatever, you know, highlights you can, and just fill these out. And I think I came back after it was like Christmas break or something with all of them done. And they were like, oh, okay. So like, this kid actually really wants to do this. Like, he wasn't just talking. So I went from being a Mario Cristobal sandwich boy to getting a little bit more, tasks going on in the program. And that was a really cool experience to take on for a year, and kind of, you know, whether it was doing the film study, going out to games and watching live, doing the recruitment trips on campus, because I knew the campus really well and I was like a freshman orientation guy. It was just a really cool experience and seeing what the difference was between those two levels. So I got to do that for about a year. And then when the coaching staff was let go, everyone was let go. And that's when I was like, maybe I don't want my job to depend on like a bunch of other people. Right. So, I stepped away from that graciously.
That's awesome, though, and I'm sure it correlates greatly with what you're doing right now.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to kind of reestablish some of those skills. It's like anything. It's a skill. You've got to practice it to be good at it. I remember when I first got back into doing this and reviewing the film, I was like, oh, man, I got to get better at this again. And so it took a little bit of time.
Dan, your general buzz on Downs, who we've seen go in some of these best ball drafts, but it seems like there's been a big teardrop when we get through the top three wide receivers in best ball to where Downs and Flowers are going. Are you looking at him as a, you know, big value right now in best ball?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think any of these guys could end up being the, you know, from Downs, Flowers on up, it could be the top guy in the class. And, you know, anytime I can get that kind of a discount in a best ball draft, or, you know, even a, you know, if I was doing a startup or something like that, I suspect he would probably go, you know, a good bit cheaper just as he is in best ball. So, you know, I'll take those kinds of, you know, it's basically arbitrage because nobody knows what the draft capital is going to be. So if you can get that guy who could still end up with that great draft capital, you know, who's to say, you know, which wide receiver is going to be drafted in the first two rounds. And if, as long as he's one of them, and I think he will be, you know, he could end up at a very good landing spot.
Yeah, and one wide receiver who's even more discounted right now, who has seen a kind of a bump in some of these early mock drafts, is Jalin Hyatt. He's super interesting because we saw him dominate. You know, he had the incredible game against Alabama, but he's been slightly down in the wide receiver rankings. Alfredo, I saw you tweeting about him. He was not in your top six, but he's certainly knocking on the door. What are your thoughts on Jalin Hyatt for among these wide receivers?
Yeah, he's actually my wide receiver six right now.
Ahead of Boutte?
So when I had tweeted that, I had actually only watched six players. And so that's why Boutte was my number six at that point. But I got to dig into a little bit of Jalin Hyatt film. And man, if I had to give you just the best summary, to me, it's he gets a grade of incomplete at the moment. And it's just because I think it's a lot of things that so many people are talking about. And it's the stuff that jumped out to me immediately on film. One, without looking, and typically I just go and I look at the film before I look at anything numbers wise, profile wise, anything like that. And when he was on film, I'm like, oh, this guy's, he's a big long strider. He's probably like 6'3", something like that. He's going to be one of those, you know, Mike Williams, big, tall downfield type guy. He's like really slender. And then I go and look and he's only 6 foot. And I'm like, okay, so 6 foot and he's a long strider, but man, he's got this speed. And he just kept getting open and kept getting open and kept getting open. But then the thing that I started to notice was, how is he getting open? And Tennessee did a lot of things to scheme him open. They did a lot of kind of bringing him in motion the same way that Miami did this year with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, where they're doing a lot of motion behind the line of scrimmage to get these guys already at about half speed before the ball gets snapped. So that way they can get to top speed early. You know, one of the other things was he was getting stacked behind other wide receivers a lot at the line of scrimmage, and he almost always got to avoid press coverage. The wide receiver route tree, not as diverse as I'd like to see it. There's a lot of questions. I think there's more questions than answers when it comes to Jalin Hyatt, but you see that the potential is there. Just because he doesn't run a lot of routes doesn't mean that he's not good at running routes. He's got some sticky hands. He's got very obvious speed. I think that so much of the production that we saw where he was dominating was a lot of broken coverages downfield. It was a lot of real quick one read offensive plays and a lot of times where it's just defensive backs on the ground falling for whatever reason or misplacing their coverages. And he'd be wide open with, you know, 20 yards of space around him. But he's one of those guys that I think because of the combine, because of his speed, and we see this every year, he'll probably rise in the draft process and he'll probably be in that like first round of talks. I think I know Lance Zierlein had him at pick number 12 in his mock draft going to the Houston Texans. So it's not crazy. I think that we will probably see Jalin Hyatt rise in both the NFL draft and dynasty rookie draft circles.
Now, this is a sort of a nuanced question here. When it comes to wide receivers, you put a lot of time and effort into your pre-draft process. When the actual draft happens, how much weight are you putting into draft capital? Do you think it's something that you should take into account but not go like all in on? Or how do you let draft capital affect like your changes in your rookie ranks?
I think that, and that's a really great question. I think that's something that everyone talks about in Dynasty a lot. And I think that draft capital needs to be something that answers your questions. It shouldn't change your opinion entirely. Like, I loved Amon-Ra St. Brown. I thought he was a second round wide receiver when he was coming out into the NFL draft. He got drafted a couple of picks into the fourth round, and everything that was getting out there on social media was, well, fourth round wide receivers don't really, you know, produce well in the league. And I'm just like, really? So had he been picked like, what, six picks before, all of a sudden we're saying that he has a chance at being productive, and then look what he's done now in the league. So I think that if you have questions about a guy, you're like, and it's like a Jalen Hyatt type of guy where you're like, the prospect profile is pretty incomplete, then yeah, I think that draft capital can sort of answer some of those questions. I think you've got to let it play a role, but it can't be the thing that totally sways and changes your opinion. Because I think that's when you kind of fall into the game of not listening to yourself, man. Like, I've learned you got to kind of stick with your original opinion on these players. It's almost like taking the SATs, right? Your first answer was probably right, so just stick with that.
And Dan, how about you? I know, look, we discussed draft capital a lot. Is there certain positions that you let it weigh into more heavily when it comes to your post-draft prospect analysis?
Yeah, I probably let it weigh the most heavily on wide receiver, well, quarterback the most heavily, but then wide receiver after that. And, you know, I've just kind of learned over the years that, you know, I don't want to, you know, I guess I'd put it this way. Like, Jahan Dotson was a guy I wasn't super high on. You know, I just didn't feel real great about him, but when he went in the first round, I got to let that influence, you know, what I think, and just realize, hey, there was an NFL team that liked him well enough to spend that first round draft capital on him, and he's going to get his chances. I mean, you know, so if they go higher than what I think they're going to go, I definitely let it influence it. And as Alfredo was saying, if they go lower than I think they're going to go, there's still somebody I'm interested in. You know, it might mean that I could get them a little bit cheaper in rookie drafts or whatever. You know, but Amon-Ra St. Brown, Stephon Diggs, you know, there are gems that come out of those later rounds. And, you know, if you think that you've got a guy that, you know, like Romeo Doubs, that's a guy I have, you know, still some solid hope for, because I liked him. He went later than I hoped he would, but, you know, still he's, I think, going to be a good player. So, you know, he was a guy I took a lot in rookie drafts a little bit later.
Hashtag Rashid Shaheed.
Maybe, though Rashid is not a guy that I'm super high on so far. We'll see. Maybe the combine will change my mind. Maybe he'll get more draft capital than I think he will, but I don't know. What do you think about Rashid, Alfredo?
We're talking about Rashid Shaheed, the
I'm thinking of.
I was like wide receiver, yeah, for the Saints, right? I was like, I don't think he's running the combine.
Sorry, I'm thinking of Rashee Rice. Somehow I got that rather than Rashid.
I'm actually with you on Rashee Rice. I'm not super high on him. I think the combine will play a good role there.
I eventually get with the program here. So
any chance we get to talk Rashid Shaheed in the Goat District, we like to sneak that in. But one wide receiver who will be on a lot of people's wide receiver one overall list, he certainly is my wide receiver one overall, is Jaxon Smith-Njigba. How high are you on him? And let's put this into a context of when you compare him to the last few classes. We'll take it back 2 years, the Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle class, and then last year's class with, you know, Garrett Wilson, Drake London, Treylon Burks, et cetera, which had so many guys hit. How would you put Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the context of these previous classes?
Yeah, so I mean, to let you in a little bit, like, on where I'm at in my process, I'm still very early in my process right now. I've done my initial an initial round of film review where I sort of get a lay of the land. It's pretty surface level, and it's like, okay, let me put some numbers to categories for these guys and see, you know, how I'm feeling about them. But after that, I'll do my analytics review, take a look at all the numbers and stats that matter, see how those stats eventually then pop on film. I'll take a look at the relative athletic score later on. I'll come back and do another film review and just kind of confirm, okay, this is how I feel about these guys. Boom, here's the complete grade. So right now I don't have a complete grade in terms of, you know, this is how this guy ranks towards previous classes. But I'll tell you this, like, he's going to be behind guys like Ja'Marr Chase and Jalen Waddle, who I had very, very high. He's just barely ahead of Jordan Addison right now, who I really love as well in my early film scores. The tough thing with Jaxon Smith-Njigba is just it's such a small sample size that we're seeing here. That sample size was still really impressive, though. It was really good, and it was with really good talent around him in Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. And I think all that needs to be taken into consideration. What I love most about him is he's another guy. Plays very smart. He looks, if he looked a little bit more explosive on film and could make some of those like really impressive runs after the catch, I think we'd be talking about him as the clear number one in everyone's eyes. And I think that's the thing that's lacking right now is the speed. He's not super fast, not super agile, but he runs smart. He's got a really good way of manipulating defenders, and he gets in and out of his breaks so fast for a guy who's not particularly quick. So I found that to be really interesting. I think there's a lot of Keenan Allen to his game. Not as big as Keenan Allen, but I think that he's kind of in that same mold. So right now, I think when I went back to look at where I kind of have him grade wise, I had him a little bit just below Drake London from last year. So he's kind of sandwiched for me, at least at this point in the process, a little bit below Drake London, a little bit ahead of Garrett Wilson in the process, but definitely ahead of Treylon Burks, and then definitely behind Ja'Marr Chase and Jaylen Waddle for me. So I know it's not the best answer you wanted, but he's somewhere between that 3 and 7 for me out of those 8.
That's been about the context that we've been discussing in the last few weeks. I mean, to me, I think you bring up an interesting point that the explosiveness concerns some people. He might be like a 4.6 flat type guy, which might scare some people off. I think if he does run low 4.5s, I think that's like a win for him. Dan, your initial thoughts on JSN? We're seeing him going about the 6th round-ish on early best balls, sometimes a little bit higher. He could be a target hog, I think, in year one if he lands right. Your initial thoughts on him, Dan?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be interested to see where he gets drafted. I think draft capital is going to say a lot about him. He's a guy I could see slipping a little bit, or he's a guy I could see that definitely, sticks right where we kind of think he's going to go. So I'm kind of waiting to see what happens with the combine, because from what I've seen and heard, he is not a super, super fast guy. So if he does turn in that better speed, that's going to move him up for me a little bit more. If he doesn't, though, I'm not going to double count that. I mean, I already expect him to not be fast. So if he's not fast, then that's already, that's what I thought it was going to be. So it won't move him down at all.
Yeah, and if he somehow is like the 104 instead of the 102, 103, then I think he's the kind of guy you really, really want to target, because I think the market kind of overreacts. Because, again, he can be a slot receiver if he lands right, too, and just be a predominant slot guy and just dominate. So it could be interesting. He could be like Michael Thomas, where he lands in the 2nd round instead, and Ohio State wide receiver put up big stats and just be a boon to our fantasy team. So I think that's very interesting. Want to pivot to last year's class, though, Alfredo, because one guy you were extremely bullish on that we were also very high on in the GOAT district, and JD, edit out this next part because I don't want the IRS getting me, but I have way too much exposure to Jameson Williams among my dynasty teams right now. Talk about Jameson Williams. How much of an offseason buy is he to you right now? And your expectations for him in year 2.
Yeah, good for you, man. Having a lot of Jameson Williams. I like that. And he was one of those guys. There's like a really simple rule when evaluating talent. And I loved this when I first heard it, because I was like, cool. So that means anyone can do this. Anyone can watch the film. And they're just like, does the person make you say wow? Like, are you just absolutely wowed by what they do on film? And that was Jameson Williams when I turned it on. Like, it did in the first game, within the first couple of plays, I was like, holy smokes, this guy is good. Like, he's got stuff you can't teach. And he is going to be, I think he was the youngest or one of the youngest in last year's draft class. He'll be 22 this season. So he's still incredibly young. And I laughed at a tweet that came out the other day from my colleague over at Football Guys, Dave Kluge, or he tweeted out Jameson Williams returned from a torn ACL and had just 3 touches as a rookie. A 41-yard touchdown reception, a 40-yard end-around rushing play, and a 66-yard touchdown called back on a penalty. Yeah, the kid might be special. So to consider, those are his 3 touches, and we're talking about massive plays. Like, I am so excited to see what he can do with a full season, with a clean bill of health, an entire training camp under his belt. And I love the fit of where he's at in Detroit, because it's an offense that the defense is going to have to spread out. They can't focus on Jameson. They're going to have to focus on Amon-Ra St. Brown, on DeAndre Swift, you know, whoever else is in there. And I think these guys complement each other really well. And he's a guy that I am looking to acquire in Dynasty Leagues. I actually made this trade the other day. I think you guys will like it. Tell me what you think. This might be a little pricey, but I traded the 104 in my rookie draft for Jameson Williams and the 201. This is a 12-team single quarterback league. And I traded the 104 for Jameson Williams and the 201 because that's how high I am on Jameson.
That's a smash win.
Yeah, and I think that people get stars in their eyes this time of year for draft picks, and it's crazy.
I'll be honest, Alfredo, I'd have probably given strong consideration to trading the 104 for Jameson Williams straight up. So when you all of a sudden tacked on that 201 at the end, I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, sure. It's funny, man. Like people in Dynasty, managers are so impatient. They get so angry if a guy doesn't play. And I think a lot of people expect the Jameson Williams to be out there like week 7 or by Thanksgiving. Right. And then he didn't. They're like, okay, well, this guy's just going to be hurt all the time and he's never going to play. And he didn't get the usage we wanted to see. And I'd rather go and get the pick and go grab like a Jahmyr Gibbs or whatever, you know, early in my draft. And so right now, I think this is the time where dynasty managers have such a high value on rookie picks. And I think it's only going to get higher as we get closer to rookie drafts. And they do things like, you know, go and draft N'Keal Harry with that top 3 pick. So, you know, if you can go and get a guy that you were high on before, it's a good time to go and buy.
I think, yeah, absolutely. And one other thought on Jameson Williams too. I mean, we talked about the touches that he did have. I mean, there were like 3 or 4 other near misses where he was targeted and Goff just missed him. You know, but all of them he was, you know, if Goff had put it in the right place, it was going to be a touchdown or a very long gain. So yeah, I love what the guy's bringing. I've got a ton of them in Dynasty too, and I'm very excited for this year.
Yeah, I love that trade as well. And I think what's interesting is when the Lions drafted him, they were very clear that they were not going to rush him back, that they viewed him as an elite prospect. And just the excitement in the organization when they drafted Jameson Williams was kind of like when Minnesota got Justin Jefferson. So I think they have a clear vision of what they're doing in Detroit. And I think the fact that you brought up how spread out the offense is, I think playing opposite of a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown is really going to help. I think both of them complement one another and will help one another. So I think that that's definitely a buy. Is there any other wide receivers that you are currently targeting as a guy, whether it's a buy high, buy low, any of your offseason buy recommendations at the wide receiver position?
I got a couple. I'll be pretty quick on that. Drake London is a guy that I think that disappointed a lot of fantasy managers in his rookie season, but he ended up pretty good in those final weeks, averaging nearly 10 targets over the final 4 weeks of his rookie campaign. And I think Atlanta is going to be one of those players for a new veteran quarterback like a Derek Carr, Lamar Jackson type. But they have the trade capital, the cap space. They showed big interest in Deshaun Watson last offseason, so I would not be surprised if they go after someone this offseason. London's got that excellent prospect profile. And so worst case scenario, if you stuck with Desmond Ridder, it was still better with Ridder than it was with Mariota. And so I think London's going to be a guy that gets more ingrained in this offense. Another guy, I think, Marquise Hollywood Brown. And this is the first time I have said this in his whole career, but DeAndre Hopkins appears to be on his way out. Hollywood really had a great rapport with Kyler Murray, who's going to be coming back from that ACL. So you got to imagine there's going to be a lot less running from Kyler. Hollywood's going to be just still 26 at the start of the season. This is going to be a whole new offense. They're going to be a whole new team. They're going to be trying to find their identity. They're definitely still going to have a bad defense. So this could be one of those offenses that just kind of has to manufacture touches for Marquise Brown. So I like him as a buy low.
Dan, before you give your buy lows, I want to just flex that I drafted Marquise Brown, wide receiver 36 overall in the FFPC Never Too Early 125 draft that I'm in, which is just ridiculous, because Alfredo bring up the rapport with Kyler, like through like week before his injury last year, like 6 games into the season, Hollywood Brown was a top 10 wide receiver easily, you know, flirting with top 5 numbers. So I think he's a major buy low in Dynasty, and I think that he's also a tremendous guy to draft right now. Dan, any guys you're looking to acquire right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I just to second the notion on that. I've been just grabbing Marquise Brown anywhere and everywhere that I can in these early best balls. I've got a couple shares of him in Dynasty, looking to acquire more. A couple other names I'd throw out there, Rashad Bateman. Right now, looking at DLF, he's wide receiver 36 in their latest mock draft. Then Elijah Moore at wide receiver 41. That's another name that I like. I mean, you know, we're going to have a new offensive coordinator, new offense, hopefully, and, you know, new quarterback. Elijah Moore was a guy that I liked a lot coming out. And he had a very good rookie year. He had a very bad second year. But that's kind of, you know, Tyler Boyd was a guy who did the same thing. You know, if you think back a few years, he had a good rookie year. Second year was terrible. And then all of a sudden, third year, he started taking off. So, it was, you know, something like that could happen there too. So I like grabbing players like that on the cheap and just seeing what happens, and maybe you can flip them out.
I love the Bateman call, Dan, because that's my name that you haven't really been hearing. He's kind of just, it's like the name nobody's talking about after being such a buzz guy, you know, last summer. One guy that I'm looking to acquire right now is Jerry Jeudy. I think that he has already broken out, and I don't think the market is quite adjusted to him. Like a locked in, you know, wide receiver two with potential to flirt with, you know, low end wide receiver one numbers if Denver takes a step forward. And Jacoby Myers, who you can get super cheap right now, who's about to get paid a ton of money this offseason. Somebody's gonna sign him. He's not quite Christian Kirk last year, but somebody's gonna pay him the bag, and I think he could land quite well. Wanted to pivot over to tight end, Alfredo. We don't need to dive as deeply into the class like we do wide receiver, but there's one player who's at the top of the tight end ranks. It's Michael Mayer. How excited are you about him as a prospect? He's certainly going to have the draft capital.
You know, it's funny. I've seen a lot of mixed opinions here, and I think I'm one of those that might throw a wrench into this. I don't know if I have Michael Mayer as my tight end one for this class. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting, right? I think from an NFL perspective, if I was building a football team, Michael Mayer probably would be my tight end one. What I'm trying to do more of is take that perspective of fantasy football, and I think that Dalton Kincaid kind of becomes that guy. I'm still very early in this tight end process, but Michael Mayer, he's good. Like, dude, he's very good. Don't get me wrong. And I get like all the baby Gronk comparisons that he gets, you know, the moniker. He's got great hands, blocking, size, all that, but I still think that he's a little limited athletically. He runs very square, very boxy to everything he does. He doesn't create too many mismatches. At least I don't see too many mismatches that he'll create in the NFL. Yeah, he'll be bigger than guys, but he's not going to be faster than them to get open. And, I'm very curious to see where he's going to end up in the athletic testing. Because for tight end, that is where the athletic testing matters the absolute most, the relative athletic score. And when you look at all the guys who have been top tight ends in terms of fantasy production, these are players that have a good, relatively good RAS or relative athletic score. And they're typically in that like mid sixes or higher. And so a lot is going to come down to, you know, Michael Mayer's agility, his long speed, all that stuff, which I don't know is all that great. He's definitely got the size for it, and I'm sure he'll probably get the draft capital. But Dalton Kincaid is a guy that I'm pretty high on. I just love the way he runs routes. He's so good at manipulating defenders. He's got some great yards after catch ability. Reminds me a little bit of Dallas Goedert. Another one I've seen out there is Zach Ertz. And, you know, funny is, like, I think a lot of people compare Dallas Goedert to Zach Ertz, and, you know, it's all these guys kind of fall in the same vein. So he's a guy that I think is a mismatch guy, and I think that he'll probably test very well. So still early in the tight end process, but I don't know that Michael Mayer is my hands down tight end one in this class.
Kincaid, more of a move tight end. I like that you're bold with that take. Now, Dan, if Michael Mayer goes 18th, does that change your opinion about him, or he kind of is what he is?
I expect him to go in the late first round, so 18th would be maybe, you know, right around, it'd be the upper end of my expectations. I'm a lot like Alfredo. I look at the relative athletic score for tight ends. I do think that's very important. The agility is what kind of tends to separate the ones that are really good for fantasy from the ones who are maybe more NFL good, or, you know, just role players or whatever. The thing is with Mayer, they may, you know, his NFL team can draft him in the first round and still not play a huge role for him right away. So he might be one of those guys I circle back around to later if he doesn't have that nice relative athletic score like I'm looking for.
Alfredo, are there any other tight ends that are getting you excited in this draft class?
Oh man, it's I think it's funny because it is a good tight end class. There's not a lot of guys that like really jump out. I think in terms of just saying, wow, holy bad word. When you're looking at, you know, these tight ends on film is Darnell Washington and just how big, like you can't watch his film and just not be in awe of his size, his power, the way he does things out on the field. And that's one that I think that at his size at what, like 6'7", 270 pounds, whatever he's at, I'm going to be so intrigued to see how he tests athletically. It was a shame we didn't get to see more of him in that national championship game. But I mean, you throw on any film of him and he just obliterates guys and blocks. He can go up and get the pass over any single like that is a mismatched guy all the way. So I'll be very intrigued to see where he ends up. He's one of those that I think he's kind of in like that next tier. I probably tight end 3 right now, just based on the potential that he has alone. I think that's so big, kind of like Jelani Woods last year, who was such a big guy and then tested really well, and he rose up the ranks at tight end. So I could see that for Darnell Washington.
And yeah, Washington will definitely help Dan out in his points per pancake block leagues.
Yes, exactly. Now those are actually kind of the guys I tend to look for at tight end. A lot of times whoever's getting pushed up to number one overall in fantasy in the tight end rankings for the rookies, I'm usually a little bit less interested in them. The first round draft capital at tight end does not mean nearly as much as it does for a wide receiver or even a running back. We see a lot of good tight ends who are drafted in the second, third, fourth round in the NFL. And, you know, again, it kind of comes back to that relative athletic score or just being able to take, you know, shots deep in my rookie drafts where it's not costing me a lot of draft capital if I've got room to hold a tight end for a couple of years and just sort of see what happens. And Washington's definitely one of those guys, you know, when we're doing the best ball drafts, you know, those deep 28 round best ball drafts, Darnell Washington's a guy that I've grabbed a couple times, you know, in like the, you know, 25th, 26th, 27th round, just because, you know, I think he's an intriguing prospect and, he can catch the ball. So who knows?
And he's been mocked by a few places to go very, very highly.
Yes.
So I think that Dan's right. Kincaid's a guy that I've been drafting a lot in best ball. But Washington, yeah, definitely Dan, he's certainly a value. We're 47 minutes in, so we can't go too deep here on these running backs. But Alfredo, why don't you share with us your early running back ranks? Give us a few names. Go as deep as you want here. We'll skip number one. You can talk Bijan if you'd like, but that's a whole show.
Yeah, no, there's no surprise at one. It's definitely Bijan Robinson. At number two, I think this is pretty much also everyone else's number two, unless you get a little spicy with it. But it's Jahmyr Gibbs. I've actually seen play. I did see one place where Jahmyr Gibbs is the running back one and Bijan is the running back two. I think that was Ryan Wilson over at CBS. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But Jahmyr Gibbs is the number two. And I think it's just simply because of that pass catching prowess. He's basically a Weapon X, right? Like he's not your traditional running back. I think you're going to get a lot of DeAndre Swift and Alvin Kamara comps for him simply because of the way he's using the passing game. At number three, I have Zach Charbonnet, who I really liked him last year, and I was surprised when he didn't come out in last year's class. And I think he only got better going from one year to the next. And I think that the thing that you're going to start to see with a lot of these running backs is that you're not going to find too many complete guys. You're not going to find a lot of Bijan Robinsons out there anymore. You're going to find guys that are specialists, guys that can specialize in something that's just like that just fits their mold, right? And it's going to get them on the field in committees, because that's what we're going to see with running backs all throughout the NFL. So Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be the passing guy. Zach Charbonnet is going to be the wrecker. He's going to be the bowling ball down the middle of the field. He has pass catching ability, and we've seen it over at UCLA. But I think that his size, his goal line ability is going to get him easily onto an NFL field. A guy that I have at four who he scares me, and I may be dropping him, but I think if it scares you, it's good. It's Kendre Miller, the running back out of TCU. He's one of those guys that I think, he possesses a nice blend of speed, size, lateral agility, vision, contact balance, all those things. The only thing is never really showed that receiving ability at TCU. And I wonder how much of that is just him not having natural hands or them not using him. We had the same conversation last year with Kenneth Walker, right? And we see he can obviously catch a football. So that'll be something to take a look at. And then my guy who I loved, and then everyone else loves him now too, the Senior Bowl was really big for Tajay Spears out of Tulane. So I've got him at running back 5. And I think a lot of those names that you were hearing all throughout, you know, the regular season and offseason last year, are some of the guys that I have lower here. I've got Devon Achane at running back 6. I'm very high on Rashawn Johnson, who I've got at running back 7, who may continue to go up my ranks, seeing how the combine goes. Zach Evans at 8, Tank Bigsby at 9, and Sean Tucker at 10.
Love it. I love the Charbonnet ranking. That's a guy that I'm extremely high on as well. Spears, what a win for him to with his weigh-in, because we were expecting him to be a lot smaller. But you're like, do we see Spears maybe touching that second round, or are you thinking he's maybe a little bit lower?
Oh, you mean a second round in the NFL draft, yeah, or NFL rookie draft?
You think day two guy?
Man, the NFL draft, right? Anything's possible. We saw James Cook go pretty high last year as well. And I didn't necessarily think he should have gone that high, but I think it's very possible for Tajay Spears to go second round. I wouldn't bank on it. I still say he's a day two guy. I think that we're going to see a lot of these running backs go in round 3. And I think that's where we're probably going to see like Kendre Miller, Tajay Spears, Devon Achane, Rashawn Johnson, Zach Evans, like a big group of these guys all go in round 3. And I think that's going to be the sweet spot in the NFL draft.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome to see so many guys going on day one and day two with the running back position. It's certainly exciting for fantasy. Dan, who's the guys that you're excited about right now, you know, when we get past, you know, the Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs tier?
Yeah, so Roshan Johnson is he's probably the one that I'm most excited about right now. I think, you know, I don't know that he'll go third of those running backs in the NFL draft, but I just like what he brings to the table. So I think he's a solid pick. Also, you know, Spears is great for sure. Love the fact that he was able to pop in the Senior Bowl. I still like Chase Evans a lot out of Illinois. I think, you know, he's got a good all around
Chase Brown.
Out of Illinois, I think he's got a good all-around skill set. He's somebody that I'm looking to see if he can, you know, stay in like the fourth round or something like that, you know, to stash on the back end of my benches. I think he's somebody that, you know, he might not do much this year, but could come around. Eric Gray is another guy like that out of Oklahoma. I like him a lot. And then Achane out of A&M. If he goes to the right spot, you know, he could be a really nice weapon too.
Yeah, I like Achane. He's just a little small, but I agree with you. Landing spot could be, you know, could really move him up because he's exciting when you watch his film. Is there any dynasty buys you're recommending at the RB position right now, Alfredo?
It's so hard to buy a dynasty running back because usually, like, if they're good, people are keeping them because there's not a lot of them. And then especially in dynasty, like, there's not a lot of young ones either. So this one was difficult to come up with, but a guy that I think you can buy just because I think so many people are trying to sell him after a great rookie campaign, which is Dameon Pierce. I think that a lot of people are already like, oh, move Dameon Pierce, cash in right now, get your chips, and that's it. And it's just you look at a team like the Texans, and how often do we see teams that are rebuilding like this that need so many other pieces say, you know what we should do? Let's invest highly in a running back. And I don't think that we're going to see that where they put a lot of free agent money into a running back or they put a high draft capital into a running back. They may get one of these other guys that we mentioned, right? Like maybe a Devon Achane out there with Dameon Pierce to be kind of a pass catching guy. There's going to be complimentary pieces, but I still think that Dameon Pierce, he proved his worth as a lead running back. I think he did an excellent job on a team that was not very good, that should only get better, that should actually have more of a passing attack next year. So yeah, Dameon Pierce, I really like him as a buy for dynasty.
Love that one. Dan, your thoughts on any dynasty running backs you're looking to buy right now?
Yeah. First, I need everybody to get their barf bags ready because you're probably not going to like what I say, but you know, okay. We've given our listeners time. So James Conner, you know, if you are going for a title, I think he's a great running back to add. I don't think Arizona's going to add much at running back. I think they're going to probably do something in free agency, but I see Connor as being the lead back still. I mean, that guy has, you know, he's got great hands. They used him in the passing game. I mean, you know, new offense coming in, all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, they're going to be leaning on him. Kyler Murray is, you know, if he plays the first few weeks, is not going to be Kyler Murray. They're going to be looking to protect him. I think there's a good chance they put a, you know, they hire a defensive head coach who's probably going to want to run the ball. So, you know, Connor, to me, his game hasn't really slipped at all. So he's a guy that I would definitely not mind buying for the next year for sure.
No, I like that one, Dan. I would agree on that one, you know, cause he's cheaper than a number of these backs that are putting up equal numbers. You know, you think about like the Chubb tier of guys is definitely a lot higher, but are going to cost you a lot more if you want to add a veteran running back. I'll say I would kick the tires on DeAndre Swift, especially if Jamal Williams resigns. He's an elite talent, and I think some people are growing a little bit frustrated with the situation, the usage. But we saw Deuce Staley head to Carolina, so there might be a change in how the running backs are used in Detroit this year slightly. And then I would kick the tires on James Cook because I think his role will continue to grow in Buffalo. That offense has got to have a little bit of self-scouting after the playoff loss. And I think using more James Cook, especially if Devin Singletary is no longer a Bill, I think, you know, James Cook could take a nice leap forward in year two. Alfredo, you've been extremely generous with your time. We're at 55 minutes here in the district. Give us your early rookie rankings. If we're drafting a rookie draft today, which way are you going? And we'll say non-superflex.
Oh, man. Okay. So, all right, let's start at the top. Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs. Then I think it's Jackson Smith and Jigba, Jordan Addison. And then this is where I told you, like, this is where I start to get a little uncomfortable. I get a little queasy. And it's funny, like, this is where you actually have to put your rankings towards what you'd actually do. I say Quentin Johnston here at 5, but I don't know that if I had that 5th pick, I'd actually pick him. I might go with someone I like more, like a Josh Downs. So Quentin Johnston at 5, Josh Downs at 6, Zach Charbonnet 7, Zay Flowers at 8. And then this is where I start to consider the quarterbacks, you know, who went to the better situation, Bryce Young or CJ Stroud at 9 or 10. And then I think 11 and 12, this is where you can start to look at those guys that maybe get a bit of a uptick because of their draft capital. Like, does a Tajay Spears end up going in the second round? Does a Jalen Hyatt get taken in the top 20 picks or something like that? And that's where you can start to look at some of those guys. But that's where I am early in the process here.
Love it. This was fantastic today. Dan's heading out of town. We're gonna miss Dan in the GOAT district. You're going on your big trip this week, Dan. Let all the GOAT district listeners, you can flex on them with your trip plans this week.
Yeah, heading out to St. Martin for 3 weeks. So really looking to enjoy some time away from the Minnesota late winter blues and you know, get into some nice sun. Got a nice place right on the beach. I mean, basically it's, you know, you walk out the back door, take 7 or 8 steps and you're in the ocean. So it's literally that close. So looking forward to that. And once I get back, then I'll be right back into best balls and rookie drafts and everything else. So
you'll still be drafting from St. Martin, Dan.
Well, maybe. I mean,
sneak one in.
Yes, I will, for sure.
Alfredo, remind everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at the Pretend GM. And then all my work is over at Football Guys. I'll be writing articles in the offseason, some rookie scouting reports. And then I've got my show, the Pretend GM Fantasy Football Show, where I'm going to be joined by a whole bunch of different guests. We're going to be talking rookie stuff right now as we're in, you know, rookie season. And then after that, we'll be recapping everything and getting you set for the 2023 fantasy football season.
Awesome. Well, everyone, enjoy the rest of your day. We're going to be back this afternoon with Josh Larkey on some early ADP values. Josh and JD and I had a chance to draft against one another recently in an FFWC draft. We're going to dive into that. And then join us on Wednesday night. Pat Corain will be back in the district. So everybody enjoy your week and tune in later. Take care.